Welcome to Pro Bono Radio, presented to you by the students of Queen's University Faculty of Law. We're your hosts, Emily and Rebecca. If this is your first time joining us, Pro Bono Radio is a show that discusses off-center legal topics with an aim of making legal discussions more accessible to you. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to emphasize that this show only contains general legal information. None of this discussion should be treated as legal advice. Our discussion merely contains insight and information about a topic of emerging importance in Canada. If you require assistance with a civil action for online harassment, please seek the assistance of a legal professional. We would like to also mention that the views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the opinions or perspectives of the hosts, the producers, or Queen's University Faculty of Law.
On this week's episode of Pro Bono Radio, we will be exploring the topic of online harassment. We will be primarily focusing our discussion on the recent Ontario Superior Court of Justice decision, Kaplan and Itas, and the emergence of a novel tort of online harassment. This will involve the exploration of the context of the decision, including the rejection by the Ontario Court of Appeal to recognize civil liability for online harassment in 2019, and the social and political developments surrounding the topic in the past decade. We will then delve into Kaplan and Itas and provide a comprehensive overview of the decision and discuss its implications going forward.
The emergence of a common law tort of internet harassment is connected to numerous legal issues such as cyberstalking and bullying, intentional infliction of mental suffering, and defamation, which is the act of communicating a false statement about someone resulting in harm to their reputation. Underlying all of these legal issues is the development of modern communication and the revolutionary impact that the internet has had in our society. The internet has allowed individuals and groups to become globally interconnected, and social media platforms have provided a virtually unmoderated forum for individuals to post and share their thoughts.
In March 2020, the Law Commission of Ontario released its final report on defamation law in the internet age. In the report, the LCO stated, and I quote, "With the evolution of internet communications, anyone can be a publisher and they can publish anything. Defamation law claims increasingly involve individual publishers posting material online that may or may not be in the public interest, not subject to checks and balances, and in some cases amount to vicious personal attacks. Estranged business or personal partners, annoyed consumers, opponents in election campaigns, individuals unsuccessful in a job interview, and or anyone else holding a grudge have every opportunity to vent online with little incentive to speak reasonably, particularly where they can hide behind anonymity. There is increasing concern about the ease with which online reputation can be harmed and the lack of any checks and balances on the torrent of offensive content that is publicly and permanently available online." This statement by the LCO perfectly sums up the issue facing Canadian courts and legislatures, as it is incumbent upon them to confront the specter of online harassment and defamation. In the report, the LCO made numerous recommendations on how to reform Ontario's defamation law in light of the transformation of modern communications due to the internet and the prevalence of social media platforms. However, legislative action has yet to be taken.
In contrast to Ontario, harmful internet communications have prompted other jurisdictions to amend or pass legislation dealing with the issue. New Zealand's government passed the Harmful Digital Communications Act, the purpose of which was to deter, prevent, and mitigate harm to individuals caused by digital communications and provide victims of digital communications with a quick and efficient means of redress. Similarly, the legislature of Nova Scotia passed the Intimate Images and Cyber Protection Act, which empowers provincial courts to take action where they are satisfied that a person has engaged in cyberbullying or has distributed an intimate picture without consent. Within the meaning of the act, cyberbullying is defined as any electronic communication, direct or indirect, that causes or is likely to cause harm to another's individual health or well-being, where the person responsible for or reckless to the possibility of the communication maliciously intended to cause harm to another individual's health or well-being. Furthermore, the legislation outlines a number of wrongful acts of electronic communications, including online impersonation, disclosure of private information, threats, false allegations, enticing or encouraging someone to commit suicide, and most importantly, communications that are harassment. While it's clear that the law of defamation is evolving and becoming increasingly intertwined with concepts of cyberbullying, hate speech, online harassment, the law, as it stood in Ontario, did not provide sufficient means for recourse to victims of malicious online attacks.
And prior to the decision in Kaplan and Attas, released in January 2021, the Ontario Court of Appeal refused to recognize civil liability for harassment, you know, whether that be online or in person. In Merrifield and Canada, which was decided in 2019, the plaintiff, Mr. Merrifield, brought a claim against his Royal Canadian Mounted Police managers, alleging that they had bullied and harassed him from 2005 to 2012. Merrifield was a member of RCMP's Threat Assessment Group, which was a unit responsible for providing protective services to federal politicians, including the Prime Minister. The unit's duties also included monitoring criminal, extremist, and terrorist groups and carrying out threat assessments in 2005. And in 2005, Merrifield's superiors learned that he was running to be the Conservative Party's candidate for Barrie in the upcoming federal election without complying with the applicable RCMP notification regulations. His manager said that there was a potential conflict of interest and removed him from the TAG unit and placed him in another unit not responsible for protecting politicians. After this, Merrifield was subjected to a formal investigation for potentially violating the RCMP's code of conduct when he failed to pay the balance of his government credit card by the appropriate date. As a result of numerous disciplinary actions against him, Merrifield commenced an action against his supervisors seeking damages for mental distress he had suffered as a result of what they call managerial bullying and harassment.
In allowing the action at trial, the trial judge recognized a new freestanding tort of harassment and that many of the managerial decisions made in relation to the plaintiff constituted harassment. In addition, the trial judge held that the defendants were liable for intentional infliction of mental suffering and awarded approximately $114,000 in general and special damages to the plaintiff. However, on appeal, the Ontario Court of Appeal set aside the judgment and held that the trial judge made several errors, including recognizing the new cause of action, incorrectly applying the legal test for intentional infliction of mental suffering, and making incorrect factual findings. Nevertheless, the Ontario Court of Appeal duly noted that they did not foreclose the development of a properly conceived tort of harassment, notwithstanding the conclusion that Merrifield presented no compelling reason to recognize the new cause of action.
And so this brings us to the main part of our discussion today. So in Kaplan and Attas, which was decided, as I said before, in January 2021, which we'll refer to as Kaplan going forward, Justice Corbett of the Ontario Superior Court of Justice took the unprecedented step of recognizing the common law tort of internet harassment. In the case, the court recognized the existing deficiencies in Ontario law for remedying this sort of behavior and distinguished the facts from those in Merrifield. I would encourage our listeners to go and read the first few paragraphs of the judgment, as Justice Corbett provides us with a shockingly pointed overview of the case and his decision. And put simply, Kaplan concerns a protracted and formidable online harassment campaign by a woman named Nadir Attas against her former colleagues, their family members, and other individuals. In the first several paragraphs, Justice Corbett describes Attas as carrying out extraordinary campaigns of malicious harassment and defamation, and how, using the internet, she was able to disseminate vile messages globally across multiple platforms, forcing her victims to litigate in multiple jurisdictions, to amass evidence to implicate her, driving up their costs and delaying the process of justice. Further, Justice Corbett notes that Attas is unrestrained by the basic tenets of decency and carried on systemic campaigns to harm persons against who she has grievances. And now, this is a very long list, but you know, the list of people who she had grievances against included adverse parties in litigation, her own lawyers, their lawyers and agents, relatives of these people, a former employer, its successor, owners, managers and employees of this former employer, amounting to over 150 people.
The decision concerns three motions for summary judgment and a motion for default judgment brought by the plaintiffs in four separate actions, all pertaining to the conduct of Attas. All of the plaintiffs sued Attas for defamation, harassment, and related claims. In the thousands of pages of evidence presented to the court, victims of Addis's harassment were subject of countless baseless defamatory posts online alleging the plaintiffs were dishonest, professionally incompetent, engaged in fraud, were sexual predators or pedophiles, among others. Addis persisted in her conduct for more than 15 years, despite court orders enjoining her to stop, an assignment into bankruptcy, a declaration as a vexatious litigant, and 74 days in prison for contempt of court.
And Justice Corbett had no trouble finding Attassa's online posts defamatory, since there was evidence that her posts had been disseminated on internet sites that do not monitor or control the contents of postings, including WordPress, Ripoff Reports, Reddit, Pinterest, Facebook, and Blogspot. The court noted that although Attassa attempted to publish her statements anonymously or pseudonymously in the other defamation proceedings against her, she really was not sophisticated enough in respect to internet technology to entirely cover her tracks successfully. Evidence from metadata collected by one of the websites, Ripoff Reports, established that the postings were made from computer terminals in one Scarborough Public Library and another from a library at the University of Toronto.
On the issue of online harassment and cyberbullying, Justice Corbett began by distinguishing the facts of this case from those in Merrifield. Justice Corbett noted that the Ontario Court of Appeal refused to recognize the novel cause of action because the tort of intentional infliction of mental suffering provided a sufficient remedy to the impugned behavior in that case, and there was no compelling authority to base the decision to recognize a new cause of action on. In light of this, Justice Corbett made it abundantly clear that claiming intentional infliction of mental suffering was not sufficient, since it requires a plaintiff to prove the acts of the defendant had resulted in a visible and provable illness per Prisno and Baycrest. Justice Corbett further recognized that, quote, the law would be deficient if it did not provide an efficient remedy until the consequences of this wrongful conduct caused visible and provable illness.
And however, drawing analogies to American case law and United Kingdom, Nova Scotia, and Manitoba legislation, Justice Corbett concluded that there in fact was sufficient authority to recognize the new cause of action. Justice Corbett held that the tort of internet harassment should be recognized in this case because Attassa's online conduct and publications seek not so much to defame the victims, but to harass them. Put another way, the intent is to go beyond character assassination. It is intended to harass, harry, and molest by repeated and serial publications of defamatory material, not only of primary victims, but to cause those victims further distress by targeting persons they care about, so as to cause fear, anxiety, and misery. Therefore, in order to provide an appropriate remedy to address the behavior of Attassa, the court held that it was necessary to recognize the new tort of internet harassment in Ontario. Justice Corbett adopted the American test for the tort of harassment in internet communications, which requires a plaintiff to prove on a balance of probabilities that the defendant maliciously or recklessly engaged in communications conduct so outrageous in character, duration, and extreme in degree so as to upset or impugn the dignity of the plaintiff, and the plaintiff suffers such harm. It should also be noted that in order to establish the elements of this tort, there is a high threshold and a formal recognition of that the tort is really unlikely to open the floodgates. It will be really burdensome for plaintiffs to meet the objective test for situations that are beyond all reasonable bounds of decency and tolerance and that go beyond the established test for highly offensive in some other torts that are similar that we've kind of discussed before.
Ultimately, recognizing civil liability for harassment over the internet provided the court with necessary remedial flexibility. Since Addis was effectively judgment-proof due to her being destitute, it was incumbent upon the court to order an efficient remedy beyond monetary damages. Justice Corbett granted three forms of relief. First, a permanent injunction prohibiting the defendant from any internet communications involving not only the plaintiffs, but all other victims of her defamation and harassment, together with their families and related persons and business associates. The extension of the injunction was necessary in order to prevent the defendant from shifting her behavior to a new set of people associated with her primary victims beyond the 150 people already affected. Second, an order that the defendant transfer title of the offending posts from the defendant to the plaintiffs. Here, the court went so far as to order that the right to the and ownership of the defendant's social media and email accounts be transferred without recourse to an independent supervising solicitor or expert appointed by the court in order to remove the publications from the internet. And lastly, the court made a number of affirmative findings of fact regarding the falsity of the impugned publications in order to facilitate the removal of the posts. Justice Corbett noted that these remedial measures were unique and necessary in order to put an end to Addis's, quote, widening web of vexatious and harassing behavior.
And although Kaplan marks a significant development, it also demonstrates the constraints of the common law to provide practical and effective remedies to the targets of internet harassment. Nonetheless, cyberbullying, cyberstalking, and online defamation are increasingly cause for concern. And it remains to be seen whether or not the defendant in Kaplan will appeal the decision, giving the Ontario Court of Appeal an opportunity to once again address the tort with a new set of facts distinguishable from those that we discussed earlier in Merrifield.
Today's show was produced by your hosts, Emily and Rebecca. If you enjoyed this show, you can find more shows just like it on the Queen's Pro Bono Radio website. To reiterate, this podcast does not contain legal advice. Pro Bono Students Canada is a student organization. This podcast was prepared with the assistance of PBSC Queen's Law Student Volunteers. PBSC students are not lawyers and they are not authorized to provide legal advice. The podcast contains general discussion of certain legal and related issues only. If you require legal advice, please consult a lawyer.